Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
Neither of us is at our usual place right now, but that's okay because the podcast goes on.
But we're not in the same place either, just to clarify.
No, we're both in different places from where we usually record this podcast, but that's okay.
And from one another, yes.
And from one another. I mean, yeah. Was I trying to hint that we... No, we're not. Yeah.
No. Can't.
There's a cat here. Not a Dan.
There's no cat here.
Yes, I have an audience. There's a cat behind me. So I let my feelings about Car play out yesterday.
Really held back there, I could tell.
You know, it was going to be a link post, and I was going to be like, I can't even, and then it turns out I could even. So I did even.
Yeah, right. I mean, we've talked about this now, I think, in several places, but yeah, including, I want to say here last week,
here last
too.
Weekend and on MacBreak Weekly this week, where you guessed it. Yeah, yep. Yeah, I don't know. It's just, shaking my fist at the big corporation for making a decision that is understandable from a business perspective, at least arguably, but bad for people. And I think it's dumb. But, you know, if it is dumb, they'll pay. So they'll pay. They'll all pay, Dan. They'll all pay.
They called me mad at the Academy.
I got a really nice letter from a reader who said, and I was like, where is this letter going? And he's like, you know, I have a car that's got Android Automotive in it, and it's got apps, and it's integrated with navigation with a version of Google Maps, and we've got connectivity, and it's all pretty good. And I thought, okay, this is going to be a letter saying, you know, you won't even need CarPlay because it's so great. And he detailed all the ways that Android Automotive is good. And then he said, but also one of the apps on Android Automotive is CarPlay, and then you can get your podcast player running in CarPlay alongside of all the other stuff that's in Android Automotive. And I don't understand why you wouldn't do that. And that's so in the end, it was like, yes, letter writer, absolutely right. Like that is that's what I'm saying is General Motors could do Android Automotive and still have CarPlay. They've just chosen not to, I suspect, because they just don't want to give people the option of escaping any aspect of their system. It's too bad. But anyway, yeah, it'll we'll all know whether this was a good decision or not in 5 years. So I guess check back then.
Yeah, I mean, that's the problem with cars, right? Like it is a investment that you make that lasts a long time, and it takes a long time for these things to come to fruition. I mean, that's part of your whole complaint, right? Like, it's going to take a long time before this rolls out, and then it will take a long time for them to decide, this wasn't a great idea, and then reverse course, so that by the time they'll just have wasted like a decade on trying to avoid what was kind of inevitable.
I think the good thing is that I suspect that if they decided this was a mistake, they could add in a CarPlay to their software stack, so they could actually reverse this decision potentially. But I don't think they will. I think that they are... I heard from somebody who I think worked in a car maker's tech division who basically said the tech people know that this is the case, right? It's the money men, it's the higher ups, it's the executives, it's the people who are like, oh, I'm so confident in our ability to release software. And that's, anyway, that's the bottom line for me is I'm not confident in any car maker being able to keep their eye on the ball long enough to keep their software up to date and have it be remotely even in parity at any point with our smartphones, which are our primary devices of our lives. And, you know, leave it to a car maker to believe that their car system is going to be more important or as important to your life as your phone. It's just completely insane. But there it is. They are, I think what I said on MacBreak Weekly was they're high on their own supply. That's basically it, right? They believe their own PR. You can say it however you like it. It's like, I think it's a very, it's a sign of a company that believes, you know, that they believe their own corporate, you know, ethos or whatever, that they're number one and they're the best at everything. And, you know, and it gives them control and money and other things too, I guess. Whatever. It's very disappointing.
Things they love.
What else going on?
There's that very bizarre story about the Bitcoin white paper, which is all over the place now. That makes me think it will disappear fairly shortly. Now that people at Apple are like, the what's the where? What?
So, yeah, so the original Bitcoin white paper, which I think is, you know, I think the idea of Bitcoin was brilliant, right? Like, I think it's a kind of a fun idea of, like, we can use cryptography to create currency and all that. And it has gone places since then. But that original white paper is a very small PDF. And so it's being used in some app that nobody's really quite sure what it's for. It's a virtual scanner. My guess is that it's software that's required for some set of, you know, MFPs, right? It's a printer that also has a scanner on it. And so they have this scanner app that's in the system, and it's got a sample PDF, and it's the white paper from Satoshi Nakamoto been in there since Mojave. Okay.
Yeah, my guess is that maybe it was just in a time where somebody's just like, I just need a white paper that's like not a copyright problem, and that and I can was, just like something that I can just stick ago. In there that is, yeah, exactly. When this was probably before it was, like you said, before it was a thing in the same way, right? You know, it's person, not Apple doing like a we're big fans of cryptocurrency.
The person who put it in may be a crypto bro, but probably was just thinking, hey, this is a widely available thing that is small that I can use as an Easter egg and serves its purpose as a preview document.
But exactly.
In any event, yes, it's very hard to imagine that it won't disappear in a future software update now. There's a lot of weird stuff. I mean, look in /system, which is locked, by the way. So it's proof, like, it has to be from Apple. Apple put it in
right.
there.
Right, yeah.
There's a lot of weird stuff down in there. There's weird resource files if you go looking. This is just one of them, and maybe it's one of the weirder ones. But there's all sorts of weird images and sample media, and mm-hmm. that's because, you know, a lot of development, there's a, you know, you need this sample media, or you needed it at some point and then it never got removed. I think there's some of that too, where it's sort of bad file hygiene. There's a lot of weird stuff down in there. But yes.
Yeah, there you can find some fun stuff in the system if you dig around there enough. That's where I always go for my images of Macs, because there's a whole section that's got all the icons of various Mac models that I always use as like the icon for my hard drive on my desktop.
Yeah. I should, so based on a comment in our Discord, I should say Chevy is not taking away CarPlay from existing cars. Let's be clear here. This is for 2024 with like one model and a bunch of models in 2025. And they, in the long run, their plan is all their EVs will be based on an Android automotive subsystem and won't support CarPlay. But there's no plot to remove it from existing GM cars.
No one's coming to your home and pulling CarPlay from your
they're just going to steal your car, quite frankly. They've hired thugs. They're going to come and steal your car. It's Repo Man, basically.
That's right.
And they're going to leave instead they're going to leave an Android like plushie in your driveway. It's like, good luck, best of luck to everyone.
That would be odd.
Yeah. So anyway, I hope everybody enjoys finding the Bitcoin. Read the Bitcoin white paper. Go ahead. It's right there, available on your Mac. If you know where to look, enjoy. I don't know if you've ever done this, Dan, but I, for various reasons, have opened the package contents of like apps and stuff. And there's there's often hilariously weird things in there that I'm sure have... I was going to say I'm sure have good reasons. I'm sure there were good reasons for them at one time, but I'm not sure that they're always like... Sometimes I think it's just stuff that is left behind that has not been cleaned up.
It is interesting, though, because it is one of the few places where some of the character comes through of like the individuals involved in making the like software, right? Like so much, especially in the Apple stuff, like so much of it is codified and it's, you know, checked by hundreds of different people or whatever. And like every once in a while, it's a reminder that like, yeah, this is something just built by a bunch of people, and those people make weird decisions sometimes, and nobody's looking over their shoulder to find out of like, should we actually do that thing? It's fine, you know, whatever. I don't know. It retains a little bit of the spirit of some of the classic Mac stuff to me, you know, when there used to be Easter eggs in about boxes and like that, which we don't really see anymore.
Except but from James that, Thompson, you know.
Yes, but not in official Apple stuff, right? Like the Apple is so buttoned down now that it's a very different culture than it was 30, 40 years ago. And so I like when you sort of peek around and find those things in code. I mean, I think that's why so many people like, Rambo and other folks who pour through all the source code to find this stuff, little details, right, about unreleased software. I think there is also entertainment in finding stuff in there that's just a, you know, a vestige of the fact that, like, you know, somebody wrote this code once and they popped in a little, if not a joke, just some reference to themselves for later or what have you, or some indication that there was personality behind this and it's yes. not just a piece of software being churned out by a giant corporation.
One of my favorite ones of those. And yeah, I mean, James Thompson, our friend who does PCalc and Dice by PCalc and did Drag Thing back in the day, he had, you know, he put a whole game into his About Box. and which is now its own app, which I love, the About by PCalc is its own app you can get and drive a car around and stuff. But there are others. The one that I always enjoyed, just in terms of showing the personality of the programmer, is in Eudora, the developer Steve Dorner, when the OS X era was happening and everything was like beveled buttons and graphite controls or Aqua mm-hmm. stuff and all of that, he added a setting. They, you know, Eudora adopted those conventions because it basically had to, or it would look like it was an OS 8 app running on OS 10. But he, in the settings, there were in the appearance settings, there was a checkbox that was called "Waste Cycles by Drawing Trendy 3D Junk." I loved it.
A little editorializing there.
Accurate depiction of Steve Dorner's personality. He was a grumpy guy. But I love that. It was like, I'll put it in, but I'm going to make a setting that lets you turn it off. And they're like, fine, Steve. And I'm going to write a sternly worded text on that setting. It's like, okay, Steve, whatever. Like, we're
Knock
Qualcomm. We don't care. Just do whatever. you're in Illinois or wherever you are. Just fine. We just want to use your email program. Go ahead. Because that's the story, is Qualcomm bought Eudora from, or licensed or whatever, from the University of Illinois, mm-hmm. largely because they standardized on it. And then they're like, we would like some new features. And they're like, yeah, but it's an academic project. We can't. They're like, what if we just gave you money and it was our product? And then you could do the features we want for our internal email. And Eudora became Eudora from Qualcomm. Weird story, weird era that was. But anyway, Steve Dorner got to be really grumpy in public in the About Box.
It reminds me of, I think somebody was asking a question about this over on the Rebound about things you had done in your, you know, your career or something that were funny or considered victories. And the one that occurred to me after the fact was just remembering when I used to be a web developer back in the day, and I had to write a series of functions that basically organized, like, we had like a hierarchical category system, and it was the series of functions to like sort things onto the correct parent categories. So you had children categories and parent categories, and I had a function that organized all of them. And in my, I think I wrote this in like during a 12-hour code shift at one point on the weekend because we were on deadline. And I remember calling my function family therapy to organize all the children under the various parents. No one would ever see that, right? No one would ever be looking at that code. But if they would, they were. It's like putting jokes in your comments.
Somebody might appreciate it later.
Somebody might dig it up and decide, mm-hmm. like, oh, this was pretty funny back then. I think there was one about cats, too, because we abbreviate category to cats. And so you had to be like a herding cats function or something.
Well, that was just the thing where the Lisa source code got released, right? And mm-hmm. everybody found, like, the I wrote this code when I was on LSD comments
yes,
or something.
Right.
I was like, oh, boy, okay, well, it was a different time.
I was watching there was actually a good Verge video about the Lisa this week that I guess was a small part of, they're doing a larger sort of video film about the Lisa, and it was just sort of talking about it. And I guess I have to admit, I had never spent a lot of time with Lisa because, for obvious reasons, it didn't last very long, and it was well before I sort of got into computing, but it was kind of fascinating as they sort of ran through, you know, some of the stuff it did do, both the stuff that got ported into the Mac later and some of the stuff that didn't make the cut. They have a pretty great segment there, too, where they talk about, this is how long it takes to change applications on an original Macintosh. And it's like, eject the disk, put in a new disk, open the new application, wait for it to load, open your file. And like, and this is how it worked on the Lisa. And it was literally just modern multitasking, right? Like, just click on this other app right here and you're done. It's like, we didn't get there back there for a while.
That's why
on
it
the
cost
Mac.
$8,000 or whatever
yes,
it was.
Exactly.
Right?
I mean, it's funny how we make fun of the iPad now for not being able to do, like, you know, for so many years not being able to do that Yeah. Like, it felt like we solved this problem and it didn't cost $8,000 now because we've done it for 30 years and nope, we're going right back to it.
Lisa in the news, by the way, that I saw somebody liken the Apple Reality Pro headset that is rumored to be coming out to the Lisa. And I think that's an interesting idea. It's not quite right, right? Like, the strategy with the Lisa was different, and it only in hindsight does it look like it was paving the way for the Mac. It's actually kind of tragic, right? Because Lisa was really advanced in a whole bunch of different ways that were interesting. It was taking kind of knowledge that they had picked up with the Apple II, but trying to apply a graphic interface to it. But the fact is it cost way too much money. And the right. Mac, which was... better in some ways, lesser in a lot of other ways, but way more affordable. Not affordable, mind you. The Mac was still pretty expensive when it came out, but way less expensive than the Lisa. And I'm sure there are a lot of Lisa dead-enders out there even to this day who are like, oh, the irony that the Mac is the thing that survived for decades because it was the weak sister of these two, but it was, you know, but it was cheaper, and so it got a foothold. But like the Reality Pro, the argument is basically like that it's the Lisa in the sense that if people be interested in it, it'll be a first cut at it, but it's way too much money, and that the one that comes next will the Reality, you know, non-pro right. will be the one that actually will make or break it, and will be able to be built. The difference is it'll be built on exactly the same operating system. Whereas with the Lisa, the sad fate of the Lisa was that in the end it got Mac mode, so it could just be a fat Mac, and it's sort of sad.
Right. Honestly. Yeah. Yeah. It is interesting. I mean, I think that, like you said, it is kind of an apt comparison in some ways. In that, right. I mean. In some ways, I think, you know, the obviously many comparisons have been drawn to the Apple Watch, but like the same idea of having a device that we're pushing the envelope, but we also don't exactly know where we should concentrate our energies. Like, we haven't quite figured that out yet.
Right.
That has a definite element of it as well. It's like, well, okay, we can do this and I'll do all sorts of things, but like until we kind of know how people use it, we can't really decide like,
where does it go
what
next?
Are the things that yeah, exactly. What are the things it focuses on? Like what is going to appeal in a stripped down cheaper version that eventually appears, or a better cheaper version? Like, what are going to be the things that compel people to actually walk out and buy this product, which is, I think, the $3,000 question.
Yeah. Our friend Kieran Healy in the members Discord says Lisa's launch price was $10,000, basically $99.95, $30,000 in current dollars. Max launch price $2,495 or about $6,500 in current dollars. So again, not cheap, but so much cheaper, you know, one fifth the right. price. And I you know, that is in some ways that's why the brilliance of the Mac. I will say the original Mac, like 128K memory, you have to swap the floppy. There's a lot of issues with it, but they got the price down, and it was obviously a platform that they could build on, and good for them for that. But the Lisa, yeah, it is a fascinating footnote in Apple history. So about the headset, I am skeptical when people bring up the Apple Watch as a parallel for it. I get why they do it, and you said it. It's more about you got to ship something and see where it goes. But the difference for me is that it's not like the Apple Watch was spared no expense. It's extremely expensive and has lots of doodads, and nobody's going to want to buy it. Like that sounds like what it's going to be with the VR headset. Whereas Apple right. Watch wasn't overly expensive. It was actually underpowered. And, you know, I do wonder if maybe Apple learned a lesson from the Apple Watch, which is, what if we go out with our best and then figure out how to drop? Because that's not what they did with the Apple Watch. And I think you could also make the argument that the Apple Watch was maybe a year too early, but at the time it seemed like Apple had waited so long to deliver a smartwatch. Right. Like, oh my God, they got to ship something. And in hindsight, they were a year or two too early in the sense that they needed to, like, the apps were running projected from the iPhone. Like, it seemed premature, but I guess you could argue that that shows you why you got to ship a product, right? Like, how right. long would Apple Watch have? Would Apple Watch have come out with a series, you know, a series 2 or a series 3 if they had waited a couple of years? No, right? Like, no, it wouldn't yeah. have been there. It was only there because they went through the pain. So that part of it, I get. It's just, it's not going to be like, this thing is going to be a small seller, not because they haven't established what it is, but because it's gonna they haven't established what it is and it costs $3,000, right? I think that right. it's gonna be yep. a little different. Little
yep.
different.
No, sure. I mean, and I think they failing anything else, the Apple Watch was a watch, right? Like yeah, at them, least it's a known category.
What I always said about the Apple Watch, and I said it about my Pebble when I had that, is like, you know what? At the end of the day, what does it do? Tells the time. Like yep. does it tell the time? It does tell the time. Number one, killer app. We had there was a bit of a debate when we were talking about the idea of a killer app, about the definition of a killer app. Somebody on Mastodon wrote to me and said, you know, killer app is a thing that destroys its competition. And I'm like, no, that's like no, iPhone
it's
killer.
Right. No, it's like the raison d'être for
that's
a
right.
platform.
Why do I buy yeah. this thing? And it's like, if you can find, so like to go way back in time, like the Apple II era killer app, VisiCalc was the killer app mm-hmm. because it was the first spreadsheet. And people were like, oh yep. my God, spreadsheet. And, you know, imagine a world without a spreadsheet. I know they don't seem very exciting, but when you didn't have them and now you have them, it's a big deal. That was a killer app.
Paper ledgers, right?
Sold computers just for that one piece of software. And we had a debate about what the iPhone's killer app was, right? Because and somebody was like, Steve Jobs said at the introduction, it's a phone. That's the killer. And it's like, no, that was not the killer app. That was table stakes, right? Table stakes is not the killer app. And my argument is the App Store was the killer app for the iPhone because easy downloading and distribution of software that ran in your pocket was like that kind of changed the world. Yeah. But for this, and for the Apple Watch too, right? It's like, well, what is it? What is it? They don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I think that is the, again, the $3,000 question is what exactly yeah.
So ship it and find out, right? I mean, yeah, so ship it and find out is the only thing you can say. And it's funny. I've talked about this before. And I mean, you and I have been writing about Apple for so long now. There's this fascinating dynamic, which is people who love Apple. And you know, there is it's a love-hate relationship. There's truth in that. People always tell me, there's some websites that I read on the internet that are very clearly fan sites. And like literally everything they do is like propaganda. It's like Pravda for whatever they're a fan of. And I'm fascinated by that.
Yeah. And the flip side too, right? There's people who are like, I'm going to hate.
All we do is destroy it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And what I always tell people when they're like, oh, is it like to Apple fans and all that? I'm like, well, yeah, but I mean, these are people who use Apple products and have integrated them into their lives. But like that can be painful too. And they want to hold Apple to account. And it's nuanced, right? But in some places, it's not so nuanced. So you end up with that. But anyway, so the dynamic that I find fascinating is that oftentimes I hear from people who believe that the sky's the limit and Apple can do anything, right? Like, oh, they're brilliant. They can do anything. And then on the other hand, I also hear from them that it's like, oh, Apple can't do that. That's too hard. It's like, I don't understand these two things because you said they could do anything, but that this thing that seems fairly straightforward is too hard for Apple to figure out. And I see that dynamic sometimes play out with things like the Apple Watch or the VR headset, where it's sort of like, on the one hand, they should ship it because real hard to ship. On the other hand, they shouldn't ship it because it's not perfect. I'm like, right. I don't get it. I don't understand those two diametrically opposed thoughts. And the truth is, Apple's history is littered with products that they shipped. You know, Apple ships when it precisely when it wants to ship.
Yes, Apple is a wizard.
It's never late nor early. It arrives exactly when it intends to. But what arrives is not perfect. I think that's the missing piece there. It's like what arrives is not perfect, but their timing is often very, very good and they benefit from it. But that doesn't mean what arrives is perfect. The iMac, when it arrived, the G3 iMac, was not perfect. Mm-hmm. In fact, it was extremely painful to not have a floppy drive, so not have writable storage built in. Extremely painful.
Classic
to lose
ports.
Lose all your peripherals because it only had USB, which no Mac and most PCs did not have at that point. But their timing was right. It was painful, and in hindsight, again, you could say, wow, they did that a little early. They could have waited a year or two. But the answer is no, they couldn't have waited a year or two because the existence of the iMac caused the situation a year or two later to be what it was. But the iMac had to exist first. So, I mean, I'm spitballing here, but this is just like, this is is what I keep thinking about this, is like, just because Apple's famous for its good timing and for waiting for the right moment, that doesn't mean, first off, it doesn't mean that they're infallible. They can make mistakes about this. But second, it doesn't mean the product that results is the right product at the right time, right? Like in the right way you're thinking of it. And the original Apple Watch is a great example. I think the original Apple Watch, given how well the Apple Watch has done, that was the right time to do it. But boy, that product was incredibly limited. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah. And it was not only limited, but unfocused, right? Like it did not know what it was. It did not know what you were going to be doing with it. It thought, hey, you're going to be just spending a lot of time sending people messages. Let's have this little contact interface right here. Like they devoted literally an entire button on the watch to this interface that ended up being a thing that nobody used, right? They did not know exactly what people were going to do with that. And it is a fascinating evolution because I think it, like you said, has become quite compelling, but there was no way for them to get to point, you know, C without going through points A and B first.
That's what Steve Jobs meant when he said that real artist ship.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you can keep it in-house forever, but what's the line? It's no battle plan survives contact with the enemy.
Yep.
That's essentially it, right? No consumer product survives contact with consumers. You have to ship it and then learn and then go. So that's actually the thing I'm most looking forward to with this VR stuff is just as with the Apple Watch. Like, we'll learn things, right? We'll learn things and Apple will learn things and then Apple will adjust. And that'll be fascinating to see, just as with the Apple Watch when they shipped it, on that fateful day where we were all about to lose our jobs, or when they announced it, not when they shipped it, when they announced it, go back and watch that presentation. Cause it's literally we threw in everything, including the kitchen sink kind of demo of what I always say is like, what doesn't it do? It's like Ron Popeil selling you something on late night TV infomercial. What doesn't it do? It does, it slices, it dices, it does everything. And then 2 years later, they're like, okay, it doesn't do everything. Okay.
It doesn't. Basically, it was like, what if we shrunk the iPhone down and put it on your wrist?
It's
and
like everyone's like, iPhone.
That doesn't really work,
right?
Does it?
And you're like, no, trust me. Digital touch. Ooh.
Yeah.
And then 2 years later, they're like, okay, we get it.
Forget about that.
That's cool. And the side button where we're like, okay, new watchOS version side button doesn't do what it did before because that was dumb. New thing that we're doing now. It's like, yeah, good for you. That's right. Like the apps. Oh, some people want a list of apps instead of a honeycomb. Okay, well, you know, all right, okay. The honeycomb's cute, but impossible to navigate. So, so I love that. I love seeing that kind of thing happen and play out in public, because obviously we don't get to see the development happen in private. That's not behind the scenes at Apple. So this is our opportunity to see, you know, to try it for ourselves and be like, oh, this is, you know, interesting and what works and what doesn't. And then also then to see Apple react to it. I love it.
Yep. I agree. It's something to look forward to too. I mean, it is a lot of, not uncharted new ground, but ground that is certainly being tread by a lot of different companies right now with all very different ideas of what that space should look like. I mean, you know, you compare what Meta's doing to what PlayStation's doing to what, you know, Microsoft was doing with HoloLens, and like a lot of people have tried a lot of things in that area and nobody has really nailed it. And I'm not saying that Apple will nail it coming out of the gate, certainly, but like we just said, it is, if you want to get there, then you got to start somewhere, and that somewhere is not going to be perfect. But very little technology comes out, and it's like, here's this thing, this widget we made, it's done. You know, like that's not generally how technology works.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be fascinating. We'll get there. We'll get there. Yeah, I think we've done enough damage for one day here on this podcast, and we've talked about this subject at least three times.
Get ready for more. It's about 2 months till WWDC. Something tells me there's not going to be a ton of news between now and then, but we'll see. You never know.
You do. Sometimes somebody might discover a PDF that's been sitting in macOS for 5 years, and then we'll have something to talk about again. All right. Well, from our undisclosed locations, thank you for being a subscriber to Six Colors. We appreciate it. And we'll see you next week. But until then, bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.